Backchat Studios is a part of the Acast Creator Network. Head to backchatpodcast.com.au to sign up as a patron and access all of our merch.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You cannot stop him. You can only hope to contain.
Well, Backchat Basketball Show, of course, we're back with the final episode of the season. There's no rules. We do what we want. We end the season whenever we want. It's a no man's land time of basketball at the moment. The NBL's finished well and truly. The NBA, the Summer League's just finished. The Cleveland Cavaliers are champions. They can hang their hat on that. But we're in no man's land, like I said, so we're having one last episode. And I promised the big fish, and I feel like I went out in the deep Atlantic Ocean. I don't know what ocean is over in the States. And we've snagged one. We've snagged a big one. Bobby Corrella, welcome. Welcome to the Backchat Basketball Show. Thanks for coming on, man.
Hey, thanks for having me, Dan. It would be probably the Gulf of Mexico, I guess, is probably the biggest body of water nearby me.
Yeah,
so
right.
That's where you found me.
To be honest, like, geography is my, like, if they said, like, there was on a trivia show and they said, give us your worst topic, we'll stay away from that, I'd say geography. Like, I have no clue. All I know is that people think Texas is big and that often the Western Australia, the state, is often compared to the state of Texas, and it's way bigger. Like, our state's way bigger. Apart from that, geography. Pfft, don't even get me started on geology, bro.
I mean,
that's
the same anyway, right?
Yeah, they're all the same.
Dude, here in America, we know American geography, but outside of this country, couldn't tell you a single thing about the rest of the world. Man, I don't even know, is Australia a continent? Is it a country? Is it a city? Who can even say?
It's all of it.
You know.
It's an island. It's the world's biggest island. It's the smallest continent. It's everything. It's that good of a place. Often people think in your part of town that maybe Australia doesn't even exist. Like, it's just some conspiracy place on the map where, you know, people live but don't actually live, and we're somehow alive. But anyway, we're not a Joe Rogan. We're not a conspiracy podcast. We got
plenty of those in the U.S. too. So
that's right. Yeah. Why don't you tell us? Actually, you know what? Before we get into anything about you, we have one question that we ask every single guest on the Backchat, across the Backchat network. Anytime we have a guest, we have one question that we start with. Now, the guy that I usually host podcasts with, Will, he's a championship player in Australian rules football. So we like to bring on athletes, talk about their great sporting achievements, but we don't let them talk about their sort of sphere of, you know, the things that they're good at. So for you, like, no offense, you're not an athlete, so you can do whatever you want. So I want to know, Bobby, your greatest sporting achievement that you've ever done in your life. It could be anything from whatever age group, the greatest thing you've ever done in some sort of sporting sphere.
Man, so I played in an indoor soccer league. 6v6, all men. Yep. And we won not the top tier championship. We won the second division championship 3-1 in the finals. I played maybe 10 minutes in that game, and it was easily the highlight of my athletic career.
That's good, man. So, do you guys call that futsal?
No. So it's like, it's
futsal. Because indoor soccer, like the real indoor soccer players, they're like, no, it's called futsal. We don't call it indoor soccer.
Yeah, see, I remember a few years ago, it was actually Donnie Nelson was like spearheading trying to start this futsal league in Dallas.
Right.
I mean, like, throughout the U.S., but headquartered in Dallas, and I don't really think it caught on. Over here, we just call it indoor because it's still general soccer rules. Like, we have indoor soccer leagues. We just call it indoor soccer, although they're playing more like 7-on-7 or 8-on-8. It's a bigger field. But this, what we were playing, I mean, I don't know if you can call it football, soccer, futsal. It was more just, like, just garbage, but we did win. You know,
some Muppets running around kicking a ball.
Yeah. Absolutely. Sometimes into the goal, if we were lucky.
Well, that's good. All right. So futsal, I was like, actually, this is pretty relevant because the Major League Cricket tournament has been getting a bit of coverage. Do you know anything about cricket?
I do. I know really? A little bit. Yeah. I wouldn't say I know a fair amount, but I do know a little bit about cricket because I have some friends in England and I went over to visit them a couple times. So while I was over there, we were just watching a bunch of test matches. There's a 2020 league that actually started in the U.S. Yes. I think that's what you're talking about. They play all their games like probably 20 minutes away from downtown Dallas. So it's that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I was watching today.
I know 2020, they're mashing. I mean, they're swinging for the fences every time.
That's right. So I was watching it today. It was like are they hosting the tournament in Dallas or something? Because the New York team was playing someone and it was woeful. Like, it's bad. It's bad cricket,
man. They don't have
any,
like, legends of the game or anything playing?
Not in America. Like, because cricket's very, like, you play for your country, you play, but then other guys go over to India and they play for leagues and in leagues and stuff like that. The pinnacle and the peak is playing and representing your country, you know, like in a lot of sports, but in cricket particularly, like, they do tours around the world playing for your country. And I've never seen like an American tour. Maybe it's like an exhibition thing to try and grow the game, but American cricket, you'll get there. Maybe it's. I don't know if it's hard to hear for you as an American to think that you're not good at something, because I feel like you guys think that the only country in the world is the USA, and anything outside is like, well, that doesn't really count. But
it's
you
true.
Guys suck at cricket, and eventually you might get good at it. But for now, it's. You know, you leave it to the other guys.
We gave the rest of the world a head start, but don't worry. We're going to catch up. We're going to come and beat all y'all down in like two or 3 months. All right, so just get ready.
2-3 months.
Yeah.
So tell me what you do for work. So you're involved with the Dallas Mavericks, but like, what do you actually do? I'd say that if you and I were just walking down the street and a friend of mine came up to me and they were like, oh, who's this? And I said, oh, this is Bobby. I'd basically say, anything good that comes out of the Dallas Mavericks, like media division, Bobby's had a hand in. Anything bad, like it's because it wasn't him involved in. So you do media stuff for the Dallas Mavericks, but what, like, I don't know, what do you do?
No, first off, I really appreciate that. I have made some bad things, so I'm not immune to criticism.
Oh, I've seen them.
Yeah. So my role is digital content manager, but pretty much what I do is primarily podcasts, do a little bit of streaming on Twitch and YouTube, do some produced videos on our YouTube channel, used to write stuff for our website for Mavs.com. And I don't do that as much anymore because we've kind of collectively pivoted to video in this industry now. But that is primarily what I do. I'm more of a like talking head personality. I try to be like a living, breathing Mavs encyclopedia. I just am able to recall all these details, and if not, I'll go research them. Very, very like information driven, stats driven kind of guy with my approach to basketball. But I'm still, you know, trying to keep the eye test. I hold a sacred place for the eye test in my heart. But my job is to just know as much about the team as possible and learn as much about the team, as much about the league as possible, and then try and distill and share that information to as many people as possible. So that's pretty, if I could boil my job down to like one sentence, that's what I would say.
It's pretty good. It's a pretty good job to have, to be honest. I used to work for a basketball team, the Perth Wildcats, which is the Perth team over here, in our national competition, who Luke Travers, who has recently signed Melbourne United, who's currently playing for the Cleveland Cavaliers Summer League team. So he's a Summer League champion. He's legit. Like, he's a guy that people have been watching for a long time. He's like at a sweet spot in our hearts because he's grown up through our city, and now he's, you know, got drafted by the Cavs. So I used to work at the Perth Wildcats and used to do similar content. It was this was 2018-17ish, so pre like when everyone was fully pivoting to podcast video and stuff like that. But I used to write all of our website content, and I remember a time early days I wrote an article about why the Wildcats lost. And I got called in from the CEO, and he like had the article printed out and he had it on the desk. And, he called me into the office and he was like, hey man, what do you think about this article? And I was having to read through, and I was like, oh, you know, we lost and this is why. And I got it. I didn't get like in trouble, but he was like, you can't write this stuff. Like, this is,
oh no,
you know, like, as much as you want to be like correct and, you know, they lost it in the rebounding and all that sort of stuff, when you're writing for a team, presenting like stuff for the team, you don't want to be telling people you're bad. Like, you need to have this element of like propping up your team. So how do you deal with that? Because you do a lot of analytical stuff. So how do you walk the line of like not shitting on the team when they're bad, but also like not lying and like just being puff piece?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are some things that are just objectively true about basketball. Yeah. A lot of that is statistical. So like if the Mavs get out rebounded 53-37, like I don't even need to say it. Like, you know, you know, everyone knows we watch the game. So like, but there's also, you know, what good is it to just like relentlessly just dunk on guys and say like, you better learn Chinese, buddy, because you're going to go play for the Shanghai Sharks. Like, that's just so beyond the line to me, because these are still like 15 of the 500 or 600 best players in the world that are on this roster, right? And so like, they're still very good. I don't need to be disrespectful toward them or toward the team or whatever, but again, some things are just very objective. I think the where like the line is sort of blurred between, are you just rose-colored glasses guy, or I guess blue tinted glasses guy because the Mavs are blue and white, or are you being, you know, objective reporter guy, is what is your perspective on things like just bad luck? You know, like last season, for example, the Mavs were a mediocre to below average defensive rebounding team, but opponents, when they got an offensive rebound against the Mavs, had the highest true shooting percentage on second chance field goal attempts in the entire database, this site called PBP Stats. It goes all the way back, I think, either to 99-2000 or 2000-2001. The highest true shooting percentage on second chance field goal attempts in the history of that website. So this is like almost 25 years of basketball.
Right.
And so like, they were fine to bad at defensive rebounding, but were they historically bad at second chance field goal attempts defense, or were they historically unlucky, or were they just both? Like, that's where I just throw my hands up in the air and say, I don't know, you know. I watched a lot of second chance points against the Mavs last season, but I watched it on a pretty league average amount of offensive rebounds. So like, that's where, you know, it's hard to be super objective, and it's hard to be real downer doomer guy, because like, some things are just inexplicable. That's where, as more of like a data driven guy, I would say I need a couple years to know if this is true or if this is just like a weird sort of happenstance in the course of the universe. So, yeah, it's kind of tough. It is kind of tough to walk the line, but there's a lot of examples like that pop up where it's just like, man, I could be just real angry and aggro and mean. I could be like, it's going to be fine, guys. Or I could just not say anything. Yeah. Because not everything needs a reaction, you know. So that's kind that's try the balance that I try and find.
Also, it's hard for you with 82 games. It's relentless. It's 4 games a week. Mm-hmm. With like me, we would at the Wildcats, we would have 1 game a week. Sometimes a double header on a weekend, so you'd play 2 games a week. Like there's a bit of space in between. Things can like sort of boil over, or like sort of people forget about things. But like, if it is a rough season, like last season towards the back end, and every second day you're like, well, they can't defend again. Like, you know, there's only so many times you can say the same thing without it being like, shit, do the Mavs, like, do the actual website, do they hate the team? You know, like,
yeah.
So,
yeah, I mean,
yeah, it must be
there's just so many games. Yeah, there's so many games. And yeah. And sometimes things will reach a fever pitch. Like, sometimes you're going to get blown out by the Hornets, and it's like, okay, this is beyond repair, right? But sometimes it's just, yeah, I mean, the other team just hit 22 threes. Like,
yeah.
You know, it happens. The Mavs just did that to someone the other day. Like, it's going to, over the course of 82 games, bad things are going to happen. Good things are going to happen. And you just go on. I mean, not every game has to be a referendum on something.
That's right. And fans, and for me, right? So I am a fan of the Mavs, and I'm also a fan of the West Coast Eagles, the AFL team. We can talk AFL in a minute.
Okay.
They're historically bad, the West Coast Eagles, right? So in the AFL, they have 24 rounds in a season. And in the last probably 2 to 3 seasons, they've won 4 games. Like, it's awful.
Like, total?
Total. It's really bad.
There's no relegation or anything?
No relegation.
So they're just stuck.
They're just bad. So they won a championship in 2018. 2019, they were okay. 2020, like, stuff happened. Like, COVID sort of started come in. Then, like, a lot of guys got injured and stuff. But the last 2-3 seasons have been brutal. I can't remember why. I think that just, they're just things that have, like, sitting in my soul that just flow out. I don't even know why I started talking about how bad the West Coast Eagles are. But, but you know, like, when things are just bad, like, you just got to roll with it. And sometimes it's just things are bad and you can't go any further. Have you always been a Mavs guy?
Yeah, my whole life since birth. Yeah. And kind of the one advantage that I had in terms, I guess, like, watching basketball or whatever, is that my dad was a coach. He just coached kind of everything at a middle school, high school level. So it's not like he's a pro coach or anything, but watching games with him, I kind of started watching the game more through that, like, X's and O's, analytical, intangible sort of stuff is what I really pay attention to, more so than just getting emotionally wrapped up in what's going on. So I've always kind of been more of, like, a, I guess, objective viewer of basketball, more so than just, like, a pure fan, I guess.
Yeah, as a fan, you do get it, like, just emotionally attached. And so when things are going, like, average or sort of good, you just don't really think about it. You're like, great, you know, things are going well. But, like, when things are bad, bad, I think this is why I was thinking about how bad the West Coast Eagles are. When things are bad, bad, like, you want to react to it. And people talk about things more. So how do you... So then you must see a lot of shit that comes through from fans, right? Because you're on the forefront of a lot of what the Mavs put out. So when you're constantly getting berated and, like, just negative fan stuff, like, do you just go, like, forget it, like, they'll do what they want to do, like, we can't change anything, or, like, do you deal with that at all?
I mean, the main thing is you have to have, like, a boundary or, like, a line when, if people are talking to you. I know people are gonna want to let off steam, and so if they do so, like, at least pseudo respectfully, then that's cool. But if it's, like, insult, I always just, like, have a really hard time whenever people say that a guy is trash. Like, that's just so mean and so, like, you're dehumanizing
this
guy.
It's also lazy.
Yeah, like, he's trying hard. The other dude is better. You know, like, he's not trash. He's just, like, he's just fine. So that's where it gets weird, or if someone starts calling me names, it's kind of weird. But after this past season, and this is, like, for reasons beyond just the Mavs having a below 500 record, but I actually just got off Twitter because it's just too much. It's just too much. And as Mavs guy, you know, to many people, you know, I have no relationship with a lot of people that followed me on Twitter, and there was thousands of people that followed me or whatever. And so to them, you know, we have this kind of parasocial relationship where I am Mavs person that is a part of their Mavs viewing experience. So
it's partly your fault.
Yeah, and, like, I would forgive someone for, like, not being able to distinguish the difference between just, like, dude that works here versus, like, the team or Mark Cuban or whoever, you know, your problem is with. But I'm the conduit through which you can feel like you're talking to them. And I just don't want to be that guy. Like, I don't know. Whenever the Mavs win, my life is fine. When they lose, my life is fine. I don't want a bunch of people to just vent to me. I don't know. It's just a lot of emotional labor, Dan, and I can only carry so much of that around. You know what I mean?
Life's short, man. You don't want to be dealing with all of that as well as all the other shit that you have to do with personally.
I just want to say, like, that passion is what makes sports so fun.
Oh, and yeah.
That's the thing that I grapple with is, like, well, what would I rather them just not care? Like, would I rather them just, like, so it is kind of, you know, I don't want to be a wet blanket and say, hey, don't get mad. Because then, like, why would I get happy? Like, if you don't have a low, then how can you have a high? But also, it's 82 games, like you said. It's just, there's, even the best teams lose 25 times, you know? So, like, you're going to be disappointed a little bit.
Yeah, and even the best teams don't win at the end as well. So, you know, it's not, there's, like, one team at the end that gets to be happy. Everyone else is probably pretty pissed. So, you just mentioned you got off Twitter. So, I was thinking... you and I used to, like, interact a little bit on Twitter. And then when I was talking to Tim Cato our friend of the family of the basketball show here, I was like, I might just hit Bobby up on Twitter. He's like, no, he's gone. And I thought, yeah, you know what? I haven't seen Bobby on Twitter for a while. So was that purely just because of last season? Or is that like, I mean, there are people getting off Twitter. So is that just a thing? Is your life better? Because I've been thinking about it.
I would say that my life is better. Yes. I think just my day-to-day life is better. And not because, like, I still have to view tweets for various reasons. I still have to, like, study fan sentiment. I still operate the Studio 41 Twitter account. Like, I'm still on the platform, but I don't post stuff. I don't interact with people. No one interacts with me. And that has made just my day-to-day life better because there's just so much negativity in the world. And a lot of it is rightful reasons to feel negative about the state of the world in many cases.
Yeah.
But some of that anger, I feel like, is just a little misguided. And it's
so
really
are you running
nice
like to, some sort of burner just to observe tweets, or are you?
We have there's a Studio 41 is like the
right.
Our production part of the company, and I post yep. tweets on that account, so I still right. go on there and just like see, because it is important for me to know what the fans are talking about. Like,
yeah.
do fans like Omax Prosper? What do they like about him? What do they not understand about him? That gives me ideas for what to do, you know, on my next stream or next podcast or whatever. So I still have to
research.
Really keep tabs on. Yeah. It's research.
Yeah, of course.
But whenever it's not like, I'm just viewing the public opinion and I'm just digesting what people are thinking, as opposed to, for example, one of the last tweets I posted was the Mavs played the Kings like game 80 of the season was pretty much already over by that point, whatever. Domantas Sabonis for the Kings, like four times down the floor in a row, four offensive possessions in a row, just made the coolest passes. I'm talking like no looks behind the backs, like drawing a double team, flipping it over his head, just like the coolest stuff. And I just tweeted like, wow, Domantas Sabonis is really good, like that, like I just appreciating how good that guy is. And someone came in and was like, well, yeah, Dwight Powell is guarding him. What do you expect? And I'm like, dude, brother, like he passed the ball. Like it's not, he didn't even score on him. He passed the ball. Like the dude is he's an all-star. He's incredible. Just this guy is so good. Like, can I not just say yeah. that this guy is good? And it was like, I just can't do it anymore because again, you know, because, and I'm going to forgive the guy for that because like, again, I'm Mavs guy. So everything yeah. that I say is related to the Mavs. So if I say Domantas Sabonis is good, it's because he is doing it against Dwight Powell or against Maxi Kleber or against JaVale McGee or whatever, which means he is better than the Mavs, which that's going to light the hatred fire in someone else's heart, and they're going to let me know about it. And I just don't want to do that anymore, you know, because,
yeah.
again, I'm just appreciating how good this dude is at basketball. Please don't kill my vibe, you know?
Yeah, how
and
dare you enjoy
the
basketball.
Won the game anyway. They won the game.
Yeah. Speaking of Twitter, so like I'm sure you have seen this Dropping Dimes 50 account.
Yeah.
What do you think that is? Because so we talked about it a couple of weeks ago with someone. It's basically like this egg avatar Twitter account who's leaking news before Shams, before Woj, like for all these guys. What do you think it is?
Man, so that first one, Dropping Dimes 20, that one seemed
yep.
legit. And whenever that person posted Kyrie Irving, you could feel the tremors like around the world. Like, oh, my God, you know, is he leaving or what? But then it got taken down and it feels like there's just a bunch of imitators now running around
yep.
Masquerading as the real Dropping Dimes. So I just don't know what to believe about like there's Dropping Dimes 50, Dropping Dimes 55, Dropping Dimes 27. I think they're all just fake. And there's another one. NBA insider GOAT, who I also think is a fake. But the thing is, you know, there's so much information out there and it's pretty easy to connect the dots and just say yeah. like, yeah, you know, what was the obvious, like Fred VanVleet going to Houston, like it was pretty obvious. So
yeah.
if you
look around at who's got cap space and stuff like that and he wants to get
yeah.
paid, like you could make an educated guess.
Yeah, and also it helps that, like, oh, 3 hours before he posted that, Mark Stein said, Fred VanVleet is probably going to go to the Rockets. So, like, you're just kind
yeah.
of piggybacking off what other people say. But I don't know, man. That first Dropping Dimes account, that was awfully specific, and I'm
I
don't know if that was a player, I don't know if it was an agent, I don't know if it was someone with a bone to pick, but I do you think that you would rather live the rest of your life not knowing who Dropping Dimes was, or do you want to know? Like, what no, outcome do you know. Think is better? You do?
I absolutely want to know, because the unknown is like, is it real or not? But if you find out the person and it's actually Shams and he's just he's bored, like, because he's just doing it all the time, and he's like, fuck, I'm gonna start tweeting stuff that I don't know is legit or not, and I can't put this on my personal account. That's interesting. I think it's more interesting to knowing who it is than if it's like randomly, like, I don't know, some, it's like Lamar Odom or something, like, that's just like got intel with an agent. You know, like, wouldn't that be fun as opposed to just never knowing? Because, yeah, I've started following Dropping Dimes 50 because that I feel like that one's got a lot of following and that's been tweeting some stuff. But yeah, not knowing what it is, that just, I think about it too much. I'm like lying in bed thinking, who could it possibly be?
But what if it's like some low level, you know, not, I don't mean to, you know, insult someone, but what if it's like the lowest person on the organizational chart, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like that would be kind of anticlimactic. Like, I want it to be Lamar Odom. I want it to be LeBron.
I don't know why I picked Lamar Odom. As
I think that would be incredible if it was.
The thing is, right, so you've worked in a team, I've worked in a team. Like, you get given information that you know you can't pass out, right? Like, that you know. So I've been in meetings where we're like, CEO's like, we're 88% certain that we're signing this guy, bringing him in, or this person's done for the season, or whatever. Like, you could easily just tweet that out, but, you know, so maybe it is just a lower, like a you and I guy, a pleb running around hearing stuff that you're trusted enough to be in an inner circle. But I don't know, that's risky. If you are on a lower end side of things, then maybe it's not worth risking a job over getting some clout over a tweet that nobody knows who you actually are.
Yeah, I mean, the secret is fun, but then, yeah, once you're found out. But then again, Secret Service can't even find out who brought Coke to the White House, so, like, maybe no one's going to get caught for anything.
I think we all know who did that. Let's be honest.
There's no rules on this podcast. There ain't no rules over here either, buddy.
Yeah. So, all right, so Dropping Dimes, whatever. I want to believe. You know what? I want to believe it's also just, like, some 16-year-old kid who somehow has a line directly to a source, and they're just feeding him stuff because they know, like, no one's gonna believe him. It's just fun. I can just share stuff. How long have you been with the Mavs for?
2015-16 was my first season full time. 2013-14 I started part time. So if my math is correct, this is my 10th season. That just happened. Yeah, I'm old. I'm old and washed, dude.
Very old, yeah. What about memories of 2011? Like, so a championship year for the Mavs. You were obviously a fan at that point, but not working for the team. What do you remember about the build-up and actually winning a championship? It's because, like, I'm an adopted Mavs fan. I picked them because I watched Dezania Diop, like, dominate one game in, like, 2004, and I was like, yep, these are my guys, you know, and for some reason I picked them. But for you, as someone, like, who's followed them all your life, do you remember much of that time?
Oh, yeah, 2011. I mean, I remember everything, man. I remember everything. That entire season, it really felt like, it's hard for me to look back and, like, remember my exact emotional thoughts as a fan, but, like, purely from an objective standpoint, if you look at all of the information about that 2010-11 Mavs team, from opening night until Dirk gets hurt, which is around New Year's Eve, they were the best team in the NBA, like, by record, all of their offensive rating, defensive rating, like, they were easily the best team in the league. They beat a bunch of teams with winning records, like, they were incredible. Dirk goes down, and without him, they go 2-9. He comes back and they just rattle off a bunch more wins. So at the end of the year, they're 57-25, I think was their record. 55-18 whenever Dirk played, which is pretty nasty, you know?
Yeah.
And yet going into the playoffs, they were considered this underdog for obvious reasons. Historically, you know, just the previous year, they lost in the first round as a 2 seed. So it's not like they were world beaters by any stretch. But, you know, as they just kept winning and kept winning and kept winning, and They got past the Brandon Roy game in game four against Portland, and then they won their next seven games in a row. Like, it just felt like with every single game they were getting better, and the belief started getting stronger, like, in the fan base. I think the players were always pretty confident, but just collectively, Dallas, just the city, just the fan base, the whole community just kind of felt like, yeah, this is going to happen. Eventually, it turns from this is fun to this is destiny. And I don't know if it's the Corey Brewer game against the Lakers in game one, or if it's game four when they just blew him off the court, or the comeback against OKC in game four, or maybe it was all the way to the comeback against Miami in game two. Like, it just felt like this is just the team of mother bleeping destiny, you know, like, yeah, nothing was going to stop them. They were just coated in this plot armor. Dirk was sick. Didn't matter. They still won the game. Like, it just, nothing could stop them. But there were signs there the whole season, you know, like the five-man lineup, like Kidd, Jet, Marion, Dirk, Tyson Chandler, their net rating that season was like absurd. They're like plus 25, but they just never played because I felt like they were kind of trying to keep it a secret. Like, they were just so good, just a juggernaut hiding in plain sight. And they just win after win. It's just like, yeah, I mean, this is, you went from being surprised to like being like this. You just expected it to happen. And so, yeah, I don't know. It just, you know, it is hard to look back and just be like very emotional about it, but you just, obviously you tied so much of this to Dirk because of how many times he failed, how many times you were actually upset. Like in 2006, driving home from game six of the finals, I was crying in the car on the way home. Like, I was 15 years old, just sobbing. You know, you can only overcome so many failures before you finally achieve success. Like, eventually you just run out of time, and the Mavs were about to run out of time. And they took advantage of the moment. So it was just a beautiful thing. The most like relatable, most cliche, most storybook, most like hero's journey kind of finish for those guys. And they pulled it off, which is just, it's unbelievable. But like at the time, it also was super believable because they just were the best team in the NBA that season. So it's really hard to kind of wrap your head around like the underdog thing while also knowing just how good they were.
It was also like, given that the LeBron Heat thing was such a force, right? So like any team coming up against them, you would think, well, you know, they've just, like, for me, like, I was a fan since early thousands, but that felt like the first time that like a super team was really formed. And I was like, how the fuck are the people going to beat these guys? You know? Mm. So that underdog thing, but you're right. Like, there was so many moments through that run, like, that sort of defined their run. So like comebacks, perfect shooting games, ridiculous outburst by Corey Brewer or like Jet. Like, there's so many good like hang your hat on moments through that season. I remember, and I might be wrong, but I feel like there was a preseason game in that year that they played Houston, and the Mavs, I think, were down by one with 0.6 left on the game, and Jason Kidd launched his pass over Yao Ming. Maybe was Yao Ming still in the league? And Sean Marion caught it and like laid it in. And I'm pretty sure that was like not even a regular season game, but that was like a preseason game. And I remember them doing that thing. Like, this team's pretty, like, there's something about this team. I may be wrong with my years, but I feel like it was that same year. You might remember that.
I think it was that year. The most unbelievable thing about that play to me is, why are your starters in the game in the final second of a preseason game? Like, what are we doing?
They really wanted to win.
Yeah, but if you go back, like, starting in 04, 04, 05 is the first Dirk season in Dallas post-Nash. So it was Dirk. Michael Finley stayed there for 1 year, and then he left, and it totally became Dirk's team. From 2005 to 2007, the Mavs won like 80% of their clutch games. I mean, coin flip games, they won almost all of them because Dirk was just that good. Jason Terry was just that good. And then you also get Jason Kidd in here too. And then you also get Sean Marion, who has a bunch of experience. And you get Tyson Chandler, great defender. So like 2011 was in many ways a culmination of, you know, there was a lot of failure in big moments, but there was a ton of individual and team successes in all of the small moments along the way too. And they were just finally able to break through and just do it. it was something very magical. Like,
yeah,
it is almost unbelievable because of how perfectly it all went. But also, like, they were really just that good. I don't know. It's just a bunch of old dudes that know what they're doing. Many of which are, like, maybe they're not Hall of Famers, but they're generational players. Like, the Mavs, they were all 35 years old, but, like, that was kind of a super team too. You know, if you really, I guess, think about it. Maybe not as sexy as the Heat, but they had a lot of talent and a lot of experience, a lot of know-how, and they were able to put it all together. The more interesting thing to me is, could a team that, sure, they knew what they were doing, but could a team that unathletic, relatively speaking, no offense to those guys, but that slow, that ground-bound, that limited, as far as, like, they couldn't switch everything in this era, you know, with Dirk and an older kid and Jason Terry, like, they would have to play a little more careful defensively. Like, how good would that team be today? You know, was that like the perfect moment in time for that collection of players? Because, like, even 3 years later, could you imagine that team trying to defend the Warriors? Like, I don't know if they could have done it. So I'm really happy they won it when they did.
Yeah, perfect prime opportunity, caught lightning in a bottle, all of that. Yeah, good times. I remember taking like random days off work. I remember putting in my leave request when the final schedule was put in, and I was like saying to my boss, I'm gonna have Monday off, Wednesday off, and then the following Tuesday, the following Thursday. And he was like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm gonna watch the finals, right? Because like, for me, as a in Australia, we watch games at like between 9 to midday, right? So you can't just watch it at night and come home from work and do whatever. Like, you gotta give up your whole day
Are you cracking one open at like 8 a.m.? Like, what are you doing?
No, having coffee and toast or some cereal or something. But the later games, if it's like three-quarter time and it's close and it's 11:40, I'm like, okay, like, this is acceptable. But
yeah, might as well, right?
May as well. What about Australian players? So obviously, Australian podcast, a lot of focus on Australian basketball. The Mavs have had quite a good contingent of Australian, a lot of Australian players anyway, considering how many Australian guys have made it to the NBA. So, you know, currently Josh Green, Dante Exum, new signing. I'm going to count Kyrie Irving. Why not? Because he's Australian. We're going to claim him. Why won't he come play for Australia in the Olympics? Like, it would be a good story. He should do that, but he's not going to, of course. Ryan Brokhoff, who, shout out to Ryan Brokhoff, just retired from the NBL, our national league. So he's focusing on other stuff with family. He just had a baby. Big fan of Ryan. He's been on this pod.
He's a great guy, man.
One of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. Of course, Andrew Bogut. We'll just keep going through names. What are your thoughts on the Australian guys that have come through?
Yeah, Mitch Creek too. He was on the Mavs summer league team and he was on a 2-way or a 10-day or something. He stuck around in the league for a little bit.
And then he went to Timberwolves, I think, and now he's playing at Southeast Melbourne. He's like their star at Southeast Melbourne Phoenix over in the NBL, who played alongside Ryan Brokhoff. So it's all in circles.
It's all connected, man. Yeah, I mean, I remember, so this is in 2018. It was right before Luka's rookie year. I was talking to one of the Mavs scouts at the time, and he said, like, Australia is the next, it's like the next frontier. Because by then, you know, there are some Americans that are still kind of in denial about this, but it is pretty widely accepted that Europe is legitimate and that players that are in EuroLeague and players that are even in the lower levels, lower domestic levels can play basketball and they're good enough to be in the NBA. And, you know, NBA has an Africa Academy set up and they have a league over there. I think it's called the BAL, and there's a pipeline through Africa, Asia, you know, players from East Asia have been in the league for a while, but, you know, Australia was kind of this, like, I don't know, it's kind of like Bogut made it through and a couple other guys made it through. But then at some point in the last 5 or 10 years, maybe it's the, you know, because the Australian Basketball League has started really picking up and there's a lot of quality talent down there with a lot of American investors in those teams, including Sean Marion, who I think is involved with the Breakers. New Zealand is I know that New Zealand is a separate country, but how is New Zealand in the Australian League? Like, is it pretty practical to get from New Zealand to Australia?
Not really. I would say it's similar to the weird, like, you guys are connected by land, so, like, the fact that Canada has a team in the in the US league. It's just like, where else would they go? And it sort of makes sense. So for me to fly to, so for Perth to say Auckland, it's a huge flight. Like it's bigger than any sort of West East Coast flight that you guys might do.
Yeah.
But it's like, where else do they go? It makes sense for them to be here. And they've been really successful. Like usually, I'd say like stereotypically or generally speaking, like those countries that are involved in leagues like this, they're usually just there as like they're making up numbers at times, but the Breakers have been like really successful. So it is sort of weird that it's another country, but we Australia like to claim Kiwis, as we call them, when they're like, you know, like Hugh Jackman. Is Hugh Jackman who's the guy that, who's X-Man?
I think that's him. He was also in the hit musical Australia, I think, right?
Yes, that's right. So yeah. Hugh Jackman, I think, might be a Kiwi. Russell Crowe. Russell Crowe, I think, is a Kiwi. But like,
okay.
Everyone's like, he's an Australian. Because yeah, I think
the only Kiwi I really know is Peter Jackson, of course. The great
Lord of the Peter Rings.
Jackson. Yeah.
Yes, of course. Yeah. So I can't remember what the question was, but yeah, we sort of just bring them in. They're like a brother from another mother.
Okay, from several time zones away.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But I think like that very reason is probably why it was really hard for Australian players to break into the NBA, let's say 10 years ago, because it is so dang far away, right?
Yeah.
And there wasn't, you know, I know that the Australian League has been around probably for longer than 5 years, but now that the best Australian players can just stay home and be in this league, where there's already American investors, so there's American interest, there's American eyeballs on these guys. And also, too, I think, you know, the same could be said for guys going to, like, EuroLeague, for example. I know Ryan Brokhoff played for Lokomotiv Kuban, I think, is, like, a really, really high-level Russian team before he came over to the Mavs. Yeah. You know, I think the rest of the world is just kind of, like, accessing Australia in ways that they didn't really do before, and so there's just more eyeballs. So maybe there were great Australian players even 30 years ago, but they just didn't really get as much of a chance because of the practicality of it all. But I mean, the national team is kicking ass, you know, at the Olympics. Yeah. Like every year they're just getting better and better. They're medaling. They destroyed Slovenia in the bronze medal game a couple years ago, so that was really impressive to see. And you're just seeing like young guys, you're seeing polished vets, you're seeing young guys like Josh Green that know how to play. And Josh, I guess, grew up, he went to high school in America, but like you could be an Australian kid and stay in Australia and then just make the jump directly from Australia to the NBA. Like it is possible to do that now, whereas before it just really wasn't. So it was interesting hearing that from a scout 5 years ago saying like Australia is like the next place. And now, over the last 5 years, just seen this massive influx of guys, and then also American players playing in the Australian League, like what LaMelo did and all that stuff.
Yeah, I think exactly.
That's really cool too.
There is this appeal that, like, you know, with the college system not paying players, where it's like, you know, the NBL, they've got a program called the Next Stars program where they will pay players who are maybe fringe guys who like might go in the second round of the draft, or like might be stash guys, where the NBL has got a program in place now where they can bring them over and say, hey, come play in our league. You're playing against like grown men, they're professionals. It's really high quality. You can get paid. And we have a pathway now to the NBA. We've seen guys do it over and over again, like LaMelo. Josh Giddey played, like he will be a max contract guy, probably will go down as one of the best Australian players ever because he's insanely good. So they've shown that there is a pathway from the National Basketball League over to the NBA. So like I mentioned with Luke Travers, who plays for Cleveland, and I think he was drafted between pick 40 and 60 in the second round, playing in the summer league team. He's like from a place called Rockingham over here, and I can't think of a place in Dallas that would, you know, like I said, geography is not my thing, but it's just like an hour out of the city, like nothing good happens in Rockingham, no offense to anyone in Rockingham, but he's just like this kid that's come out of nowhere, and he's very good at basketball, and I really hope he's got a tough road ahead, you know, like he wasn't playing for Duke or Kansas or anything like that. You know, he's come from like, he's really climbing that ladder. So there definitely is the pathway. Do you notice, is there any sort of like, cultural sort of things that happen with these guys that come over. Like, a lot of them go to college, and then so they're sort of, it's not like they're brand new. It's not like Luka coming over to the Mavs and being like, man, the US is weird. Have you dealt with much of that Australian stuff with them coming over?
I don't really think there's, I mean, I'm sure culturally there are huge differences between America and Australia. That goes without saying, but like, the language is the same.
Yeah.
Maybe expressions are different, but I think the language barrier ultimately is like the biggest obstacle that, let's say, European or African or Asian players have to overcome, or South American players too, speaking Spanish. But if you can just speak English, it's so much easier to get to know guys. It's so much easier to take coaching. It's so much easier to be able to just like literally ask your coach, like, hey, what do you think I should do? And be able to communicate in, you know, fluent full sentences and everything. It's just, it gives you a huge advantage over guys that might otherwise struggle with that stuff. So
yeah,
I think that's the biggest burden that a lot of international players have to carry. And the fact that Australian players don't have to do that, I think, is really good. Coupled with the fact that too, I mean, just again, there's just a lot more. I can't speak to the lower levels of Australian basketball, like youth basketball programs and things like that. But I know the NBA has an academy in Australia. Obviously, again, yeah, the NBL has a lot of interest from American basketball programs, and so I feel like that there's a much clearer like pathway and a much clearer bridge connecting Australia to the NBA than there was in, say, even like Spain, like pre-Luka. You know, it feels like a much smoother process. I'm not sure if that's true though.
Well, I wish I had that when I was coming out of primary school into high school. Maybe a pathway for me to pursue basketball as a professional athlete. I didn't have that. I'm 5'7" in shoes. It was never,
Jelly Walker, same thing. You could have been him.
It's never meant to be. I'm going to be honest. I'm very unathletic. I'm rocking a dad bod right now. I'm wearing a hoodie right now because it's cold, but it's also just to cover the dad bod. One last one. I've kept you longer than I said I would, so I apologize. One last one before we finish off. Last episode of the Backchat Basketball Show for the season, before we have a little break. Can you give me your favorite Dirk memory for your time being in the team? So not like fandom time, like times when you've been working at the team.
Man, it's tough. The first memory that came to my mind is the night that he scored that he reached 30,000 points. He comes out of the tunnel for layup lines pregame, and earlier in the day, like, he'd seen the 30K shirts on the seats and all that stuff. It's gonna be this huge milestone. This is the Mavs' last home game, yeah, before a road trip, and like, he's just like, why are you putting all this pressure on me to do this tonight? Like, he had to score, I think, whatever it was, 20 points, I think, and at this point he's 38 years old and he's averaging like 12 a game. Like, it's really hard for him to score that much in a game. But he comes out of the tunnel, pregame layup line, and I'm sitting way down low. It was one of the few games that I've sat courtside for, and he comes out of the tunnel and, like, swear to God, he turns the corner and we lock eyes for like maybe 0.2 seconds, but it felt like for about an hour. And like, I just saw a different look in his face than I'd seen in 5 years. You know, like, he just looked extremely locked in, and he comes out and he scores whatever it was. He got to 30K like a minute into the second quarter. He had 20 yeah, points in the game, had 25 points at halftime. It was just unbelievable. And like, we looked right at each other, and I just saw, he looked like a cyborg that was about to just destroy the planet. Like, he just looked so laser focused. And at that age too, because we'd all kind of thought, like, he's old, the team sucks, like, the competitive fire, I'm sure, is there, but like, can he get to that place, you know? And he did, and it was amazing. And I got to sit, like, you know, 10 feet away from him while he was doing it. That one, or 41-21-1, his last home game in 2019. He comes out, scores 30 points. The crowd is just going nuts the whole game. Luka had a triple-double. It felt very symbolic, you know, handing over the torch, the new era and all that stuff. And, you know, he grabs the mic after the game. And for, like, weeks and months leading up to that game, we all, you know, on the business side, we all pretty much knew this was it. We didn't know for sure, but, like, we pretty much knew. you know, but we had to keep it a secret, and we didn't expect Dirk to talk about it. Like, we expected him to address it after the fact, but he just did it right there, live on the court in front of everybody, and that was shocking. But just seeing, like, the, you know, his emotional reaction to him saying that, own, like, it finally, like, sunk in that he's going to retire once he said it, you know, and then he lost it. Crowd lost it. Everyone is crying and cheering and, like, freaking, like, Larry Bird is right there and Scottie Pippen and Charles Barkley. Like, it was just amazing. So those are probably a tie for first. One is, you know, me getting a very up close and personal glimpse into, like, the soul of this ultimate competitor, this all-time great person at his craft. And then the other one is, like, this guy gave everything that he could possibly ever give to this organization and to the fans and to us and to just everybody. And then for him to finally be able to just, like, kick his feet up and say, like, this is, I don't have any more to give. Like, I'm done. I'm ready for the next chapter. And then for us to be able to thank him for it right there was just, I mean, it was just such a beautiful moment and two things that I will never, ever forget for the rest of my life.
Yeah, that's really cool. We've seen players go out in, like, pretty bad fashion, you know. They get, like, 2 minutes in a game just to appear. So for Dirk to be able to do that was very special. One time that Dirk and I locked eyes was when I was in Dallas at the start of 2018. And I was doing some interviews in the locker room after a game. And I don't know if you, like, this is a thing, but I think it was that, like, post-game, Dirk would shower, and then he'd come talk to the media, but, like, he wouldn't dry himself. Like, he would he'd just come out in a towel, be dripping. Like, the guy didn't put a towel through his hair or, like, arms or anything. And I just remember, because I'm, like I said, 5'7" in shoes, standing next to him, like, holding my phone out, like, recording this interview, and my arm was just, I was just drip, like, his body water was just dripping on my arm, and he could just see that I was just standing there copping his shower water. So not the same sort of level of, like, cool meeting eyes as he's about to drop 30, as he's about to score his 30,000th point, just dropping shower water on me. But I'll remember that. That was an interesting
It's still
thing.
A moment, though, and you it's haven't cleaned your arm since. The funny thing about that is, like, you're right, he didn't really ever dry himself. And so sometimes, like, you know, we'd have this towel wrapped around him, and then he'd throw it into this bin right in the middle of the locker room that's just full of used towels. It's just, I mean, it's obviously they're clean, but, like, it's nasty, you know? But every now and then he'd throw it and it would, like, you know, he wouldn't see you standing there and it would just land on you. And one time it landed on me and I was like, this towel is actually pretty dry. Like, it doesn't even feel like it's been used, you know? So I don't know whether to be grossed out or, like, honored, but either way, I'll savor it, you know?
It's just there for looks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Bobby, thank you so much for giving up your time. I know this is a bit of a dead, well, not really. When you're working for a team, there's never dead patches, but, like, summer league's over. Now we just wait for the proper season to start, things to start kicking off. So thanks for giving up some time. Back to our basketball show. We're going to have a little break, a few months. I don't know the exact date that we'll be back, but it will be 2 to 3 months away. We'll put stuff up on socials, backchat_basketball. Send us an email, hello@backchatpodcast.com.au. We've got a bunch of stuff planned for next year, some more Mav stuff in the works, as well as some coaches and stuff. We'll be talking in NBL. Bobby, thanks again, and we'll chat to you next time.
Thank you, man.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
That episode from Backchat Studios lives on the Acast Creator Network. If you want to sign up as a patron or access all of our merch, head to backchatpodcast.com.au.